All right, so ready to dive into another fascinating legal case?
Always up for a good deep dive, especially when it involves a fiery Frigidaire and some interesting legal twists and turns.
That's exactly what we've got today with Donegal Mutual Insurance v. White Consolidated Industries. On the surface, it might just seem like a straightforward product liability lawsuit, but trust me, there's way more to unpack here.
Oh, absolutely. This case goes beyond just figuring out if a stove was faulty. It grapples with some pretty fundamental questions about how our legal system handles these kinds of product liability claims.
Like, how much do we rely on what experts say in court? What kind of evidence is enough to convince a jury?
And what happens when a judge disagrees with what the jury decided? We'll be looking at all that and some crucial procedural rules that can really make or break a case like this.
By the end of this deep dive, you'll have a much better grasp on how courts try to balance things out.
The rights of consumers who might be harmed by faulty products, and the rights of companies who made those products. And of course, the insurance companies who often end up footing the bill.
Right, because when things go wrong, someone's got to pay for the damages.
Exactly. So, shall we set the stage for this legal drama?
Let's do it. Picture this. It's 1995, and the Neuron's house catches fire. Devastating, Rima.
Absolutely. And the alleged culprit, their Frigidaire stove.
Yeah, apparently it was in self-cleaning mode when things went south.
It's always a bit ironic when the feature designed to clean things up ends up causing so much damage.
Talk about a bad day. Anyway, their insurance company, Donegal Mutual, pays out a pretty hefty sum to cover those damages.
Over $141,000. That's not chump change.
Not at all. So naturally, a couple of years later, in 1997, the Neurons file a lawsuit against White Consolidated Industries, the folks who manufactured the stove.
Makes sense. They suffered a loss. They want to be made whole. Standard procedure.
Except there's a twist. They voluntarily dismissed the case.
Ah, intriguing. Now, a voluntary dismissal doesn't always mean the end of the road. Sometimes it's more of a strategic pause.
And that's precisely what happened here. Fast forward to 1999, and the lawsuit is refiled.
Back for round two. And this time, Donegal joins the Neurons as a co-plaintiff.
They're basically saying, hey, we paid out all this money, so we want in on this action.
It's their right of subrogation kicking in. We'll dig into that a bit later. But the point is, now you've got both the homeowners and their insurance company teaming up against the stove manufacturer.
A united front.
Exactly. And in 2002, the case goes to trial.
And the jury delivers a verdict in favor of the plaintiffs, awarding them $104,000. Case closed, right?
Well, not so fast. Here comes another one of those legal twists. The trial court judge drops a bit of a bombshell. They issue a judgment, notwithstanding the verdict, or JNOV for short.
A JNOV. That sounds serious.
It is. It's essentially the judge saying, hold on, I think the jury got this one wrong.
So they just overturned the jury's decision.
Not quite that simple. A JNOV isn't just a matter of the judge disagreeing with the jury's interpretation of the
There's
facts.
a higher bar.
You got it. The judge has to be convinced that the evidence presented was so overwhelmingly in favor of one side.
In this case, White Consolidated.
Right, that no reasonable jury could have possibly reached the verdict they did.
So the trial judge essentially thought the plaintiffs hadn't done enough to prove their case.
More specifically, they didn't provide enough convincing evidence that a defect in the stove actually caused the fire.
Which brings us to the central legal issue at the heart of this appeal. Was the trial court justified in overturning that jury verdict?
And to really grapple with that question, we need to understand a key concept in Ohio product liability law, the consumer expectations test.
So break it down for us. What's this test all about?
Well, it boils down to this. Was the product in question more dangerous than an ordinary consumer would expect when using it in a way you'd reasonably expect?
So let's apply that to our flaming Frigidaire. Would the average person putting their stove in self-cleaning mode expect it to get so hot it can start a house fire?
Exactly. That's the crux of the matter.
And in this case, the plaintiffs had an expert witness, Bernard Doran, who offered his professional opinion on the matter.
Right. And Dorn argued that there was a flaw in the stove switch design.
Which is what he believed caused it to overheat during that self-cleaning cycle.
Sounds plausible, but the trial court wasn't buying it. They basically dismissed his opinion as just guesswork, not real evidence.
But then the appellate court steps in and takes a different view.
They acknowledged that, yeah, there wasn't some smoking gun piece of evidence. Like, Dorn didn't recreate the exact failure of the stove in a lab or anything.
But they pointed to the circumstantial evidence.
The fire originating at the stove, no other obvious causes. Couple that with Doran's expert opinion, and the appellate court felt that was enough for a reasonable jury to conclude, hey, this design defect was likely the culprit.
It didn't have to be beyond a shadow of a doubt, just more likely than not.
It's a classic example of how circumstantial evidence can be very persuasive. Like, if you see someone walk in soaking wet carrying an open umbrella, you don't need to have seen the rain to make a pretty solid guess about what happened.
Makes sense. But let's talk about Doran's testimony for a moment, because that raises another huge issue in this case, the admissibility of expert testimony.
Right, because White Consolidated didn't just take issue with what Doran said.
They challenged whether he should even be allowed to say it in court.
Their argument was that Doran's opinion wasn't reliable enough to be presented to the jury. Specifically, they said he hadn't done any physical testing to back up his claims.
And they invoked the Daubert Standard and Ohio Rule 702.
Two major players in the world of expert testimony. Basically, they established the ground rules for what kind of expert opinions can be considered in court.
So, for those of us who aren't legal eagles, can you give us the layman's explanation of what these rules are all about?
Sure thing. The Daubert Standard comes from a landmark Supreme Court case, and it's all about ensuring that expert testimony is based on solid science, not just speculation.
So no throwing darts at a board and calling it a scientific analysis.
Exactly. It's the judge's role to act as a gatekeeper, making sure that any scientific or technical testimony presented to the jury is trustworthy and reliable.
And Ohio Rule 702 pretty much does the same thing at the state level.
Right. They're both aimed at keeping what's sometimes called junk science out of the courtroom.
So it sounds like White Consolidated was arguing that Doran's lack of physical testing meant his testimony was basically junk science.
That was their stance. But here's the thing about Daubert. It doesn't always require an expert to have conducted physical tests in every single scenario.
It's more about their methodology.
Right. The court looks at the steps they took to form their opinion, the principles they relied on, and whether those principles are generally accepted within their field.
So, like a doctor diagnosing a patient, they don't necessarily run every test imaginable.
Exactly. They use their knowledge, experience, and the patient's symptoms to arrive at a diagnosis. That's a form of methodology.
So, in Doran's case, even though he didn't recreate the specific stove failure in a lab, his methodology involved using his engineering expertise, examining the stove switch, and ruling out other possible causes of the fire.
And the appellate court found that to be a sufficient foundation for his expert opinion.
It wasn't just a random guess pulled out of thin air. It was a reasoned opinion based on his years of experience and a systematic process of elimination.
Precisely. They emphasize that reliability doesn't always hinge on direct physical testing. An expert's experience combined with a solid methodology can definitely be enough for a jury to consider.
So Daubert is all about ensuring that expert testimony is grounded in something real, something trustworthy. But it also recognizes that expertise can come in different forms, not just lab experiments.
It's a delicate balance. Now, let's switch gears for a moment and look at another interesting aspect of this case. White Consolidated also tried to argue that Donegal's claim was time-barred.
Meaning they waited too long to jump on the lawsuit bandwagon?
Exactly. They were basically saying, hey, the statute of limitations has expired. Your claim is dead in the water.
But if you remember, the Neurons initially filed their lawsuit in 1997 and then voluntarily dismissed it.
Right. And that's where a specific provision in Ohio law comes into play.
Sort of a legal loophole.
Not exactly a loophole, more like a safety net. It gives plaintiffs a one-year grace period after a voluntary dismissal to refile their case, even if the original statute of limitations has run out.
So they get a second chance to get it right.
In a sense, yes. And because Donegal was added as a co-plaintiff in the refiled lawsuit in 1999, which was well within that one-year window, their claim was considered timely.
So they cleared that procedural hurdle. But there's another legal concept that comes into play here, standing. Did Donegal even have the right to sue in the first place?
It's a good question. After all, it was the Neurons' house that burned down, not Donegal's.
So how did Donegal get to be a part of this lawsuit?
That's where subrogation rights come in. Because Donegal, as the insurance company, paid out a big chunk of change to cover the Neurons' losses. They basically stepped into their shoes, legally speaking.
Like they inherited the right to sue.
That's a good way to put it. So even though they weren't directly harmed by the faulty stove, they have the right to seek reimbursement from the party they believe was responsible.
Kind of like, we paid the bill, now it's your turn to cough up the dough.
Exactly. Subrogation allows insurance companies to recoup their losses and, in a way, helps keep insurance premiums from skyrocketing.
Okay, so long story short, the Court of Appeals ultimately reversed the trial court's decision to toss out the jury's verdict.
They concluded there was enough evidence, both from the expert testimony and the circumstances of the fire itself, for a reasonable jury to decide that, yep, the Frigidaire stove was to blame.
They also upheld the admissibility of Doran's expert testimony, finding that his methodology was solid, even without those specific physical tests.
And of course, they confirmed that Donegal's claims were filed on time and that they had the right to sue.
A total victory for the plaintiffs.
It would seem so. But as often happens in legal cases, there's a bit more nuance to the story. We also have some concurring opinions from the appellate judges.
Concurring opinions, what are those?
It's where a judge agrees with the overall outcome of the case, the final decision, but they might have different reasons for reaching that conclusion or want to emphasize certain points.
So they're adding their own two cents.
Precisely. And these concurrences can be really insightful because they show us the different ways judges are thinking about these complex legal issues.
So what were the concurring opinions in this case?
Well, Judge Wolf, while voting to reinstate the jury verdict, expressed some reservations about the lack of what he called robust empirical testing by Doran, the expert witness.
So even though he ultimately sided with the plaintiffs, he wasn't totally comfortable with the level of scientific proof.
Right. He raised a question that courts grapple with all the time. How much scientific certainty do we need in these cases? Should we be demanding more rigorous testing, even if it's difficult or impossible to replicate the exact circumstances of an incident?
It's a tough question. On the one hand, you want to make sure the expert's opinion is grounded in solid science. On the other hand, you don't want to make it impossible for plaintiffs to prove their case.
It's a balancing act, for sure. Now, Judge Fain had a different focus in his concurrence. He zeroed in on the consumer expectations test itself.
The test we discussed earlier about whether the product was more dangerous than an ordinary consumer would expect.
Right. Judge Fain felt the court could have dug a little deeper into what that actually means in practice.
But how do we define what a reasonable consumer expectation is?
Exactly. He argued for a more detailed analysis of that concept, which could provide more clarity and consistency in future cases.
So both of these concurring opinions, while agreeing with the outcome, highlight the ongoing debates within the legal system about how to handle these complex product liability cases.
They show that the law isn't always black and white. There's a lot of gray area and room for interpretation.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive into Donegal Mutual Insurance v. White Consolidated Industries, what are the key takeaways for our listeners?
Well, first and foremost, this case really underscores the crucial role of juries in our legal system. They're the ones who weigh the evidence, assess the credibility of witnesses, and draw those all-important conclusions.
And courts should be very hesitant to second-guess their decisions.
Exactly. Secondly, this case drives home the importance of procedural rules, things like statutes of limitations, those deadlines for filing lawsuits, and the rules around refiling a case after a voluntary dismissal.
Those procedural rules can be real sticklers.
They are. And they can have a huge impact on the outcome of a case, regardless of its merits. And finally, we saw how the standards for admitting expert testimony, like the Daubert standard, work in a real-world scenario.
It's not always about having conducted specific lab experiments.
Right. An expert's experience, their methodology, and the principles they rely on, all of those factors are considered when determining if their testimony is reliable enough to present to a jury.
So a lot to chew on for all you aspiring legal minds out there.
Definitely. And to leave you with a final thought, how do we strike the right balance between demanding scientific certainty and recognizing the value of expert experience and circumstantial evidence in these product liability cases?
It's a question that courts are constantly wrestling with.
And one that will continue to shape the future of product liability law. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Always a pleasure exploring these fascinating legal cases with you. Until next time.